Hi, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, in your face, literally. This week's show is sponsored by Linode and BuddyBuild. Okay, Manton, I'm sitting here waiting patiently because who has two thumbs and can't be woken up by a vibrating watch in the middle of the night? This guy. Waiting until November 17th to 24th because everybody in the world apparently has had their delivery estimate updated and revised in a positive direction, except for me. So I keep logging in and seeing if Apple has thrown me any love. And unfortunately, they have not.
Yeah, that's a bummer. But it's coming up. You have a week or 2 weeks to wait. Someone in the Core Intuition Slack joked that you need like a new smart bed that like shakes and wakes you up. So like there's no way to sleep through your alarm. Dumps cold water on you from the ceiling. I don't know. Yeah. So I did, we ordered basically the same time, but I got lucky and I got the ship date last Friday. My phone arrived late in the evening. So I've been using my iPhone X for almost a week, and it's a great device. You know, like all the things that I expected were true, like Face ID works and that sort of thing. The notch is not that big of a deal, and like it's faster and the cameras are better. Like the things that I was hoping for are true. It's still, man, coming from the iPhone SE, it's still taking me some time to get used to the big screen.
Yeah.
Like I know if you're coming from a Plus phone, you're going to love it because it's like it's a little smaller and the screen's great. Like if you're coming from a normal iPhone 7, iPhone 8, no problems. But coming from the SE, I feel like I have to be really careful with it. I hold it differently. I'm worried I'm going to drop it, but I refuse to have a case with it. So that's still taking some time to get used to that. I can't really be as careless with a phone as I used to be, I think. And maybe I'll get used to that, but I liked being careless with my phone. I like kind of flipping it around and like not worrying if I dropped it. And like I had this kind of like nervous habit where I would like flip the phone in my hand. I have yet to try that with the iPhone X because it's so much bigger and I have a feeling I'm going to drop it.
I mean, that's the funny thing is you could have broken your iPhone SE or SE as well, but it would have been Only several hundred dollars lost instead of $1,000.
I mean, you know, but the SE is extremely well made. Like, I have dropped it, and I have, like, slightly dented it, and it does have, like, a scratch on the screen that's kind of minor. Like, it's not in perfect condition, but it feels much more sturdy and just kind of robust. And I know the day I drop my iPhone X, the screen is going to shatter.
Yeah.
I just have a feeling. So the kind of good news with that is that I switched to the Apple upgrade program as part of this upgrade, and you have to get AppleCare Plus with the upgrade program. Like it's not a choice. So I have AppleCare. That will help a little bit if there's ever an issue with it. But you know, so far so good. The phone is really great. The screen is just incredible. Like when I opened the box up, it looked completely fake. Like the screen looked like it was fake plastic. Like it's printed on plastic. Like it really, the screen is way better than I expected. It's really an incredible screen. And so I think it's going to be a fantastic phone. Still getting used to the size, but yeah, that just comes with the territory.
I'm definitely excited to get mine because I mean, the impressions I've gotten from people who have it is like far exceeding expectations.
Yeah.
And that's really great. I mean, it's great for Apple. It's great for everybody who bought one. And it's just amazing. My mind is kind of blown that the iPhone 8 was so good and that the iPhone 10 is even better. And it's just like, it's almost like Apple. I mean, I'm an Apple fanboy, but it's almost like they're just like rope-a-dope, right? It's like they're just like dancing around the competition now, right? Like who comes out with two phones that are that good in the same year?
Right. I mean,
that good and that, you know, there's a lot about them that's similar, but the design changes in the iPhone 10 obviously took a lot of work, and it takes a lot of work to make those design changes, but it takes a ton of work to make those design changes successfully. You know, I think everybody was a little worried they're going to be like, oh, how's it really going to work? Like swiping up instead of pushing a home button. How's it really going to work? How's Face ID really going to work? All these things that are like brand new and for in that respect, you can evaluate those things as 1.0 features. And the little teeny little criticisms that I've heard from people are that's a really impressively small amount of criticism for a major 1.0 debut of some of these features.
Yeah, absolutely. The Face ID and the way it unlocks and the new gestures, it's really well done. Like, I honestly have no complaints about the way it works. Face ID is not perfect. Sometimes it doesn't unlock, but Touch ID doesn't unlock all the time either. So I think it's as good. I think it's as reliable as Touch ID for the most part. It's fast enough. And the way it works, the way you can pick up your phone, and then when it notices you, your notifications, you know, are revealed, like the text of them is revealed to you, the way you just swipe up to enter the phone without thinking about it. Like, it really works very well in practice. So great job.
Remember when portrait mode came out at the first, like it was what, 2 years ago now, maybe? Uh-huh. And people were like, oh, this is amazing, but look, there's this little spot where like the hair is all blurry. And then those things, like, I know it's not perfect still now, but portrait mode has just apparently, I haven't had a phone yet that supports it, but portrait mode has apparently gotten better and better and better with every iteration.
Yeah.
And I think Face ID, there's no reason to think it's not in that same kind of realm of technology, where if it's working this well now, you just know it's going to get better.
Yep.
That's awesome. I mean, I think it's reasonable to expect that whatever minor problems people have had with it now, those will gradually improve. And I'm really looking forward to that. I mean, I think this is what, just to take stock a little bit here as well, and a little mea culpa. This is one of those situations where I'm kind of ashamed how negative and dismissive I was about the prospect of Face ID. Hmm. Because this was going back now, I don't know if I talked about it on the show. I think I may have, but on Twitter for sure, I was like one of these, ha ha, yeah, right, Apple's going to do Face ID, right? How's that going to work in the dark? Har, har, har. You know, like, in retrospect, I feel like that was an example of
me. It works better
me.
In the dark, actually. Right.
Well, that's just it. It's an example of me pulling one of these, like, I think I'm so smart.
Right.
I think this is obvious. It's obvious on the face of it that Apple could never do this. And they just totally blew my skepticism and everybody else's skepticism out of the water. And I have to remember, I'm going to take a lesson from that, which is, you know, Apple makes a lot of mistakes, but they also keep coming through with these, ha, you thought we couldn't do it.
Right.
We did.
Yeah.
And it's a great example where I just looked at that proposal that they're going to do Face ID. I looked at it. You know, a lot of people have said other people were skeptical because other phones tried it and didn't do it well. That wasn't the case for me. The case for me is I was skeptical because I had a narrow vision of what the technology would do. And my narrow vision was it was going to take a picture and do a 2D photo analysis. And it seemed on the face of it, har har, not viable. And well, of course they're not going to do that. Of course they're going to spray this, you know, of course they're going to use some technology I've never even heard of to spray like dot matrix IR beams on you and then take a live film of that and pipe it through the secure enclave. Of course that's what they're going to do.
It's funny. So, like, anyway. I'm still at that phase where I sometimes, when I'm unlocking my phone, think it's just reminding myself, it's shining lights I can't see in my eyes. Like, is this a good thing? But I think pretty soon, after a couple of weeks, you know, I won't think about the technology anymore. But I'm still in that early phase of like, I know how it works. It's just a little weird.
Right. I know, especially seeing that, I'll post a link to it in case people haven't seen it, that Verge video.
Yeah.
The Verge review with the... they used a camcorder that picked up the invisible IR as, like, it showed it as white light on the black and white film. That, it contributes to the unease for those of us who are a little paranoid. But, you know, I'm the kind of person who, even though I'm so into tech, every once in a while I think about, like, all the radio waves passing around me. And I'm like, is this good? And I have to assume that, you know, Apple's not... spraying our eyeballs with damaging rays. But
hopefully they've tested this and got everything worked out. And like similar technology has been used before, like in the Kinect, the Xbox Kinect did this kind of thing on a different scale, I think, and not quite so like in your face maybe. But and it's interesting how some things from the video game market are making their way into other devices. Like I remember when I realized how the original Wii worked. I like how the motion sensor thing, you know, because like the Wii remote itself has a camera in it. Like when I realized how it worked, I was like shocked and just like floored how cool an idea that was. And, you know, and then the Kinect is even kind of more advanced. And then the iPhone is the, kind of the most advanced version of that kind of thing that we've seen so far. But so after Apple actually announced Face ID and showed it, I was pretty confident. In fact, I wrote a blog post called Face ID Confidence just about how I wasn't worried and I thought it was going to be fine. But there were a couple things that I was skeptical about. And the big thing that I've talked about on this show several times was I thought Apple had made a huge mistake with the rollout of the iPhone 8, 8 Plus, and announcing the X. And the fact that they called it the 10 and it was confusing and people were like, where's the 9 and is the 8 already old? And I thought they had made a huge marketing mistake and sales were going to suffer. And I've said this multiple times. And I think I was wrong about that because we just got Apple's quarterly results. And of course, the X is not in those yet. It shipped, you know, a few weeks after the quarter closed. And there's not many 8 sales in that. But it was a huge record quarter. iPhone sales are doing great, and they've projected for this upcoming quarter, which is going to be full of X and 8 and 8 Plus sales, they've projected to be like their biggest quarter of all time. And so I think I was wrong. Apple seems to know what they're doing, and the iPhone is going to sell, they're going to sell a bunch of these. All the great models. all these, you know, from the SE, hopefully you'll get a refresh in a few more months in the spring, to the, you know, the older models they sell, to the 8, the 8 Plus, the X. Apparently they know what they're doing and they're selling a bunch of all of these. And so that's great news.
Yeah, well, it certainly seems to be reflected in Apple's performance on the stock market. And to say that this is like the victory lap image I'm getting again, where it's just like they're just like in your face, right. Literally.
It was interesting on the Upgrade podcast, Jason Snell pointed out that, like, on the earnings call, Tim Cook did kind of like say, you know, this is a rough, we're not exactly sure like what unit sales and revenue is going to be because this is new for us. Like, he acknowledged that, like, we've never done 2 brand new phones before, this is a new thing.
Right.
But that's kind of like, yeah, we don't want to send too strong of a signal to Wall Street because they'll freak out. But it sounds like they are pretty confident that this is going to be a strong quarter and that the fragmentation that we're seeing with the 8 and the X turns out not a big deal.
Turns out it's just like, in a way, it's, I was thinking about this the other day, in a way, it's like, I think you and myself, others worried that by having the iPhone 10 come out right after the 8, that the 8 would seem like this cheap, like weak phone. Mm-hmm. Another way of looking at that is that they've changed their quote unquote cheap phone into an $800 phone, you know, or $700 phone. It's like, oh yeah. Oh, too bad. All those people are going to, you know, all those people who can't afford or don't want to pay for the iPhone 10, they're going to resort to buying the lame old $700 phone instead, you know? And it's like, that's kind of clever, Apple.
Yep, that's not a problem for Apple.
I'm looking at the stocks right now, live stock status for Apple. It's funny, they are at 175.21 right now, and they're just inching. They're at 800, their market cap is at $899.89 billion. So, I think that they're right now at the point, this is the highest that they've ever been, effectively. They're about to eke over to the $900 billion market cap. And it's just so weird to me to think about this company being this big. But it's fascinating. I mean, I'm still I have this mix of feelings. I'm still like rooting for the underdog with Apple.
Yeah.
And they're not the underdog, but there's something about it. My history with the company, my history as a fan of the company, my history as a customer. It seems to me unprecedented that a company could be this big and this successful and still project a sort of scrappiness. And that might just be my bias. It might be completely my bias, but you don't get this kind of impression from a lot of big companies. I guess maybe, you know, if I'm being fair about it, I've seen some similar sort of attitude from Amazon. They seem, you know, like you've said before, they like to try lots of different things, and they sort of act like they sort of have acted like an underdog and have been an underdog, especially when it comes to things like the Fire Phone or whatever. But, you know, they're pretty darned big too. So.
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day when I was looking at the Apple earnings too, and I still feel the same way. I still kind of feel like Apple is the same company. That is just a remarkable achievement that they've been able to like basically trick us into thinking that they're the underdog. They're the company that no one believes in, and they're the ones that prove everyone wrong when they do stuff like you, like what you described with Face ID and prove the doubters wrong. It feels like the same company, but if you look at the money, it is so different. Yeah. You go back to 1996, 1997, you know, they're making like a few billion dollars a quarter at best, right? Or like a little more for some quarters.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, we're talking whatever their new projected next quarter is, 80 something billion dollars. Like, it's so much bigger. And then you think about the Apple stores and just the global scope of the company. It's a really remarkable that they've been able to keep that kind of feel. Like, it still feels like Apple, but it's a ginormous corporation.
I was working at Apple. I was hired there May 1996. The company was unprofitable when I was hired, I think. I was a contractor before that, so I can't remember exactly where the turnover was. But while I was working there, we had our first profitable quarter in like years, or a couple of years at least, I think. And it was like kind of obvious to everybody who worked there, probably obvious to people outside the company, that Apple had just like pulled some kind of like bookkeeping stunt. It was like, we need to make this look like we're making some money. And so like, it was like coming after like quarters after quarter of like, you know, $200 million loss, $300 million loss. And then there was like this one quarter that I think the amount that they made, quote unquote, was like $26 million. They were like, we made $26 million last quarter. And they even made t-shirts that said, I was there when the comeback began.
Right.
And what a comeback it's been.
Yeah. And when I said couple billion, I mean, I was thinking like revenue, net revenue. But yeah, like some of those quarters, they lost money. And yeah, what a comeback. Indeed. Okay, this week we are sponsored again by Linode. If you need a Linux box to host a website, private Git repository, or maybe to serve as the backend for your iOS app, consider Linode Cloud Hosting. With Linode, you get a server running in under a minute. They've been doing infrastructure as a service since 2003, and their plans start at the 1 gigabyte level for just $5 a month. Linode's 10 global data centers are equipped with industry-leading, data center-grade SSDs, and their plans range from the low $5 a month plan all the way up to high memory plans starting at 16 gigabytes. And all of this comes with the full control you expect with a VM, supporting Docker containers, encrypted disks, VPNs, etc. 24/7 friendly support, even on holidays. To learn more, go to linode.com/coreint and use promo code coreint 2017.
Manton, you know, I've usually done that read, and then you talk about how you've successfully used Linode in whatever your latest project is, or how we continue to use Linode for Core Intuition and other projects. And we switched it up this week because this is a momentous week. I have finally switched redsweater.com to Linode.
Woohoo.
And it's, you know, it took a little bit of, you know, me reading the promotional message for a whole year to finally get around to doing it. No, but it's funny because Linode, we're grateful they've been sponsoring us for longer than a year. And in fact, as I was going in to finally make this change, I looked at it and I realized I had already signed up with Linode. I changed another of my servers over a long time ago, but the Red Sweater server, I had already signed up and made a new Linode instance for this server. And then I just needed to quote unquote do the finishing touches. And it turned out it was a year ago. It was November 2016 that I made that server. And so I got in. I finally realized I don't want to be paying for my old server. That's one of the reasons I switched to Linode is because you get so much more power and speed for much less than I was paying for my old service. And the irony is I've been paying for, you know, both for the past year. But anyway, finally got in there. It was so fast, so easy. As soon as I got Linode up and running with Red Sweater, I reloaded the page. And I was like, you know, this is actually even faster than my old service that I was paying. I think I was paying at least twice as much, maybe four times as much for a similar powered server. So anyway, now we can both speak with a lot of confidence about the ease of getting set up with Linode, power you get, and the great value that it is. So remember to use this coupon code, CoreInt2017, CoreInt2017. You can go to linode.com/CoreInt. Take advantage of that coupon code and you'll get 4 months effectively for free with that $20 credit. That gets you 4 months at the $5 a month rate. So if you haven't tried Linode yet, take it from me, take it from Manton. This is a great service, reliable, fast, good value. Check it out. Thanks again to Linode for sponsoring the show. Well, Manton, as I mentioned in the Linode sponsorship, I've switched Red Sweater over to Linode, and this was one of my items on my to-do list because, in part, this is a pragmatic thing. I've been wanting to switch servers for a long time. You know, I'm working on Mars Edit 4, big new release. This is kind of similar to how I switched my payment processing over to Stripe a few weeks ago. It's like I have this list of things, and it's this list of oh yeah, I have to do that. And it's not that I have to do these things technically to release a new update to Mars Edit, but practically speaking, I want to be on a good footing when Mars Edit 4 goes live and I start taking sales orders. One of the reasons that I was motivated to switch servers now is because at my old host, I was running not an ancient, but an old enough version of Linux that Ubuntu that I had trouble like updating it to the latest. And so it was in one of those situations where I was like, okay, I need to keep this thing limping along. I can't really update to like the newest PHP. I'd run into these situations where I was like, oh, I want to update to that, but I can't because can't in quotes, meaning like I need to be some kind of like Linux genius to do it. but of course, if you stay up to date with the latest Linuxes of whatever, you know, flavor you like, a lot of that stuff just comes for free. It's easy to install with the package managers, etc. So I had this like list of things I wanted to do, and one of them was I wanted my server to be up to date. So it was a perfect opportunity to do that. The reason is, of course, I don't want to run into some problem on launch day where I'm ideally bringing in thousands of dollars in revenue. And then because of some side effect of running some janky old PHP, I can't take orders or something.
Yeah.
And then, just a lot less flexibility. Now I feel like I have the flexibility. First of all, I have confidence that since I'm running newer stuff, I'm running PHP 7 now. That's I don't know a ton about it, but I know enough that people say, PHP people say it's faster.
Yeah.
I think it's higher performance. I'm less liable to run into some of those like PHP overload things that can tend to bring down servers. It just feels like, it feels like I took my car in and I got like a whole new like crankcase of oil and everything's running smoothly. And so it was kind of interesting. I was chatting with you yesterday. I just pulled the switch on this switch yesterday. And it was one of these situations where I have this like long checklist of things to do when I make a server change. And it's one of the reasons, frankly, that I put off doing it because it's really easy at Linode to make a new server, but there's still all the things you have to do to configure it to suit your particular needs, right? So I had all these things like, you know, install and configure MySQL. And then I have to have a strategy for transferring all my data over and la, 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 la. And it's all stuff that, that's another reason I wanted to do the transition now, because I don't want to be making a transition like that when I'm on fire with sales.
Right.
And right now, one of the benefits of only making a sale every so often is I can like take my store down.
Fire. Yeah.
And it's like, chances are nobody's going to try to make a purchase right now, unfortunately. But it was a great opportunity then to just sort of like be able to make the transition. Yesterday, I was like pretty well through the transition. There was just some like loose ends to tie up. And I sort of took like the risk takers, you know, choice, and I switched the DNS over. I was like, this is close enough. It's loading for me. It's close enough. And it's been pretty smooth. But then I woke up this morning to a friend of mine in private chat saying, you know, this is like your feed, your web feed is returning a 500 status. And if you turned out, if you went to the HTTP non SSL URL, it just gave me like the generic Apache page. There were some rough edges that were completely my fault, you know, little mistakes I made in configuring things. But hey, now I moved over. And this is one of those things that feels great, because I think you and I maybe share a little bit of this problem, Manton, that we like have too many services running at once sometimes. Like it's like every time I've switched hosting services, I've like kept like some little thing behind at the old one. And so I end up paying for like all these different services. But as I move forward and consolidate things, it just feels so good. It's one of those things that feels good when you shut down the old one. Like, it felt good to me to shut down PayPal's credit card processing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that $30 a month charge I was getting from PayPal every month, it's like relatively minor, but it stings when you don't want the service you're paying for.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting that you'd made the transition over, and I agree with kind of like, I think where you were yesterday, which is just like flip the switch, because you know, this, you're not going to have a better time. Might as well do it now, be done with it. There might be a couple mistakes or problems that you can sort out over the next 24 hours, but yeah, much, much better than having to scramble when you're releasing a major version of your app. I've been slowly ramping up to launch micro.blog to the public, and I still have some of those kind of hesitations, because some of my servers, they're not in like the perfect condition that I would ideally like them to be in for a public launch. And I'm still kind of on the fence about how much of that work I'm going to do and how much I'm just going to say, you know what, things are pretty good.
Yeah.
They've been running for a year for all the beta people. So, at some point, you just have to make the call. Am I going to switch? Am I not? If I'm going to, just do it. Get it done.
Well, yeah, that's the fastest way to find out what you forgot, is to make the switch.
Right.
And then see what breaks. And it's, you know, ideally, I think I would have been a little bit more responsible about it. It was kind of funny that the thing that motivated me to make the switch sort of impulsively was I did like this, what I considered at the time, I did this like trial transition of, you know, dumping the old databases and then re-importing them on the new server. And I got to this point where I was like, ugh, like if I flip the switch now, I don't have to do that dump again. You know, like I can just be done.
Yeah.
And it was one of these little things where I was like, it feels close enough. And, you know, it turns out in retrospect, I was right. I think the only mistake I made that affected a customer was I had one person who bought FastScripts who didn't get an email confirmation. And like I said, my sales are slow enough right now that I can actually keep an eye on things. And I was able to see that happened and then follow up with the customer directly. So it's not like, oh, 300 people just bought Mars Edit and none of them got an email. That's a hurt place you don't want to be in. But when it's just one customer, it's easy to follow up on, fix the problem, et cetera.
So as part of this, you were chatting with me before we started recording. You mentioned you had to reinstall Postfix, the mail server, or reconfigure something. And I was like, what are you doing? Why are you running your own mail server? And, you know, it sounds like there were a lot of little pieces that you moved over as part of this. But are you sure you should be doing all those pieces? Are you sure you should be like... having all that on your Linode instance instead of like outsourcing some of the stuff.
Am I sure about it? I don't know about that. But, you know, there is this spectrum of comfort with running your own stuff. I remember having a debate with our friend Craig Hockenberry years and years ago, maybe at C40. I think it was C40. We were at the pizza restaurant that Wolf took us all to. And Craig and I had this healthy debate about whether I was insane for running my own running my own server at all at the time. You know, it was like, he was of the mindset that you just let somebody else take care of that. And I was of the mindset, even 10 years ago, I was of the mindset that things had, quote unquote, gotten easy enough that even people who aren't Linux experts can, you know, set up a Linux box and have like automatic security updates on. And sure, there may be mistakes I'm making, but I think it's like basically okay. And I was saying to him, like, I get full control and I don't have to call somebody when I need some like special software installed. And I guess, you know, there's that end of the spectrum Craig was on and may still be on. And there's my end of the spectrum where maybe I do bite off a little bit more than I should, but it's kind of impressively easy these days. And like I said, I might be making mistakes. I hope I'm not like, by admitting I have some of these things installed, I hope I'm not like inviting people to, you know, crack at my server and make it fall over.
You are, well, not our listeners.
You know, like, so I run PostFix because here's another reason why I run so many things like this on my own. And this sort of ties into like when people ask us like, oh, why do you do your own payment processing? The fact is, back when we started, the rationale for outsourcing things in some cases has gotten greater only because there are services now that are like affordable and easy to set up and connect to. Used to be in the old days, you had to do everything yourself. You know, it's like, I think of like, for example, mailing services like MailChimp and Campaign Monitor. Like when I got started, there were no such, I mean, there may have been services like them, but they weren't like affordable and easy to connect to and easy to use. And so I think there's a strong rationale to use like whatever mail service you're using. For example, I just think like literally, Manton, it was as easy as saying in my Linux box, sudo apt-get install postfix. And then I answered two questions. I said, what do you want to do? I said, I want to make a mail server. What do you want to call it? I gave it my mail.redsweater.com name. And then after that, I can send mail from my box. And I think there is a strong argument for outsourcing it, but when it's that easy and it's been working for me for years, I don't see a strong argument either to like pay somebody else $5 a month or whatever to make that work.
Yeah.
And I get, you know, I'd say like, unless it's something where like I'm clearly opening myself up to security problems or failure modes, then I would say, hey, if it's as easy as a single install on my box that I do once and I forget about it forever. And I mean, don't want to jinx it, but I've been using this approach for at least, I don't know, at least like 10 years, I think. And it's working. So it's one of the things actually I love about running my own server is, you know, my own virtual server. One of the things I love is if there is a solution that's easy and works and straightforward, it keeps me from having to outsource it and saves me a little bit of money. So there's a good argument, I think, for outsourcing. I actually do outsource my mass mailings when I do them because I'm not. Mm-hmm. I think that's a harder challenge.
Yeah.
But sending a little programmatic email from redsweater.com to my customers, I kind of like being in control and makes it real straightforward how it works and how they get the mail.
So that one jumped out at me just because of my experience, and that is like, I'll take you back to 2003. I'm running my own server. Like, I used to be, when you were running on your own server, it wasn't like an instance on, you know, right, some virtual server somewhere. It was like actual hardware somewhere. And for a while, I actually ran my web server, like that was my blog and email, just out of my office in my house. And I had a static IP address. Don't even remember how I got my internet back then, but I had a static IP address. And I had a, I just looked this up because I blogged about it in 2003. I had a PowerMac 7600 running Yellow Dog Linux, which was like one of the PowerPC flavors of Linux. And everything was great. I had my blog on there. I had the email and stuff. And then, because I'm an idiot, and I had accidentally misconfigured SMTP, spammers used that box to send, like, I don't know, you know, thousands or whatever, millions of emails out, because it turns out it was like an open relay and people could just send email through it. Whoops. And so that's just an example of, like, I'm not a sysadmin. I don't always do this stuff correctly. And it is easier. That was a long time ago. It is easier now.
Yep.
But ever since then, some things I just don't run myself anymore, and email is one of them. But it is expensive to outsource some of this stuff. So, you know, you had mentioned, you know, you don't want to spend $5 a month. I spend a lot more than $5 a month, actually. I've just looked. This is kind of a little shocking, but I spend, for all my email stuff, like MailChimp, all my newsletters, all my mail goes through MailChimp's Mandrel service that I think, I don't know if they, I think they built it separately and then pulled it in. All the, you know, you forgot your password, all this kind of transactional emails that I send all the time for micro.blog and my other services. I spend $70 a month for all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that, it adds up. It's a lot. But at the same time, how else am I going to, like, if I want to send a nice HTML email with a button and click here and all this kind of stuff to thousands of people that are waiting to sign up to micro.blog, and I want it to work great and I want to track it.
Yep.
How else am I going to do it? I'm not going to write my own software for that because I'll never do it.
Yep.
I could use something that's off the shelf. There are Mac apps that can do this kind of thing that are one-time purchases, but MailChimp works really well. And so I've decided, yes, it's expensive, but if I think about sending those thousand emails and making sure that I have the best chance of converting those people to paying customers that pay me $5 a month, it's worth it to me.
I think you make a good argument, and especially because you, I mean, you're using mail in a different way than I am. And I think that there's a point where I could see the value and the merit of switching to something, especially this kind of transactional mail, is when you have a lot of different scenarios that lead to email, you want it to be maybe more bulletproof, more trackable, more everything. You know, on the security front, though, I just want to point out, like, that is one area, I think, where, yes, things have just gotten so much better with the typical, like I said, when you install a typical Linux distribution like Ubuntu, it's like, they know, I mean, smart people have been working on this now for a long time.
Yeah.
So the defaults tend to be a lot smarter. Like, it tends to be everything shut down by default, like, more or less. Mm-hmm. And then you have to, like, go in and, like, open up ports. And at least that's my I have this kind of, like, checklist I do now. And if you go to any of the hosting services, including Linode, they have these, like, security checklists, things like you can kind of go through and say, like, hey, these are, like, smart things to do. And, like, for instance, there's a firewall, right, on my site. And you use, like, kind of common sense for, like, which ports to open. Like, there's these default, like, firewall rules that basically shut down everything and then open up ports like port 80 for HTTP. And, you know, you can't, even though I have a mail server on my site, you can't do that thing that you suffered from in 2003 because port 25 is blocked. Like, I don't need port 25 because I'm on this, you know, my outgoing mail comes from the server it's on.
Yeah.
So that's just one example of like many where, you know, in 2003, you would have installed something like Yellow Dog Linux.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have had any great guidance about how to keep it secure.
Right.
All the defaults would have been like, hey, trust everybody. Yeah. It's the internet.
Yeah, it's a different, you know, world, like, back then.
All the defaults were like, hey, if you want to send me a file, just connect to my server and write a file anywhere you want on the disk. And like, there was no such thing as, like, unattended upgrades. You know, unattended upgrades, for folks who aren't familiar, it's like a default like setting in at least Ubuntu where you can say like, hey, I'm cool with you installing all the like most critical security updates for me without even asking. And there was no such concept. And like, you'd keep like you probably installed your Yellow Dog Linux in 2003 and ran it until 2013.
Not quite that long, but yeah.
Back in the day, you would have run it for many years without ever updating it.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a different world, and I'm not saying that like it's impossible to make mistakes in running your own server, but if you have a little diligence and you know that there are mistakes to be made, you can like easily Google for most things these days and be like, hey, Google, am I being dumb for installing PostFix on my server? Mm-hmm. Probably would say yes. I haven't actually Googled that. But at least you can know that you're not like opening yourself up to some, you know, you get a lot of security by simply knowing how to set up your firewall and not opening ports without thinking about it.
Yeah. And you're right. Yeah. Documentation is way better. Guides are way better. The defaults are way better. And there's trade-offs. It's really a trade-off in like the whole time money thing. You know, it's like, how much time do you want to spend managing your server? And I do a lot of that. I do a lot of time managing my servers. And I worked on a new feature last night, actually, for micro.blog that involved a lot of like Nginx configuration and like tweaking and stuff. And I tried to keep it as simple as possible, but it did require some digging and research and experimenting. And it's just how much do you want to invest in it? And at some point, I hope to be successful enough where I can not outsource this stuff to another provider that will charge me per month and they'll deal with it, but to outsource this to another person who is better at this than I am. And that's right. The dream. I'm not there yet, but one day I would love to be able to have someone that I could say, I need to change this Nginx thing, or I need to change this firewall thing. And, you know, like tell me the best way to do it and take care of it, because I don't trust myself to do everything perfectly. And that I can get by pretty far. I've gotten by for a number of years, muddling through, but there are people that are better at this than I am.
Yeah.
All right, this week we are also sponsored by BuddyBuild. BuddyBuild is the continuous integration, deployment, and user feedback service built specifically for mobile development teams. It's trusted by thousands of companies like Slack, Reddit, and Firefox to reliably build, test, and deploy their iOS apps. With BuddyBuild, teams are saved from spending hundreds of hours writing and maintaining build scripts, debugging flaky test infrastructure, managing provisioning profiles, and manually deploying to the App Store. Instead, you can focus on crafting applications your users love. See why thousands of teams love BuddyBuild. Start your 3-week trial at BuddyBuild.com today.
Manton and I promised that we were not planning our conversation about outsourcing services before this sponsorship. But this is a great example, I think, of a type of service where a lot of us can appreciate how error-prone and fraught the process of trying to run your own custom-built continuous integration can be. And the fact that BuddyBuild is designed around making this so easy, in particular for iOS developers, boy, they connect with all these different source control services. You can use it with GitHub. You can use it with GitLab. You can even use it with your own custom repositories. And then they just add all this magic on top. All of this, hey, we're just going to make this work so you don't have to think about it. They check out your project. They build it. They get it ready to deploy to your phone. And it's just like, this is a great example of something that is not as easy as a single sudo line on your Linux box. This is something where all of their experience making this work smoothly, elegantly, saving you time, getting your apps deployed, tested, it's really worth taking a look at what they've done, because they've done some really impressive stuff. And as Manton mentioned, you can get a 3-week trial. Start and go check it out at BuddyBuild.com today. Thanks to BuddyBuild for sponsoring the show. Well, Manton, this is a special show full of regrettable things that I have decided to do all on my own.
And we wonder why Mars Edit 4 hasn't shipped yet.
So let's move on to the next phase of the list of things that I would like to, but may not be able to do in time for Mars Edit 4's launch. So one of the things that happens when you do everything on your own is you end up becoming an ersatz so-called web designer, right? Mm-hmm. So I spoke earlier in the show about how I switched my web server over. I have mentioned that I do potentially foolish things like run my own postfix software. And why don't we just lump in there the fact that I know how to edit HTML at all and that I deign to design my own website. Let's put that in the list of foolish things because I'm regretting that more and more every day. I'm looking at redsweater.com right now. My basic design has been the same for 10 years.
Wow.
I have to say, I'm biased because I'm used to it and I made it. I have to say, I think it holds up pretty well for being 10 years old. Like there's no little like animated construction worker saying like, under construction.
Yeah.
And I've made minor tweaks over the years. But you know, you go into like my, I think it's all like, there's a lot of tables for layout and you go into my product pages and, you know, design wise, it's like all this really tiny text. I'm not proud of it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look good. It doesn't look modern. It doesn't fulfill the job of making a marketing pitch to my potential customers that is probably effective, you know? So on the eve, not the eve literally, but on the metaphorical eve of releasing a major update to my app, it's really hard not to be lured into the temptation of also going in and saying, you know what I need to do? I need to not just revise, but completely overhaul my website.
Yeah.
And the risk there, of course, is coming up against the fact that I don't know how to design websites. I am not familiar with any of the modern techniques. I don't know which browsers support which HTMLs. And nonetheless, I started going down that path. And then pretty soon I'm like, huh, maybe I should be like using Twitter Bootstrap. And then luckily, you know, people like gave me some warnings about how to or whether to use that and absorbing this information. One of the problems, Manton, as I'm sure you can relate to this too, is when you're an indie developer and you decide to do many different things at one, decide to take on many different aspects of the job. The only reason we are even in that position is because we find learning new things that are outside of our comfort zone somewhat comfortable. You know, like it's not as uncomfortable for us as it is for some people. So faced with the question like, I should probably update my website. A different personality would say, step one, identify a person who is qualified to update websites.
Yeah. But not us.
I say, I know I can't do a perfect job, but I could do a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wouldn't be that hard. And then probably 3 weeks from now, I'm like, I'm finally figuring out Twitter Bootstrap.
Major progress. I use Twitter Bootstrap, by the way, for whatever that's worth.
Oh, good. Good to know. Yep.
That's a plus one for, mm-hmm. But I'm not on the cutting edge either. I barely kind of scrape by. And it's something I'm going through as well right now. And in fact, I just redesigned the homepage to micro.blog yesterday. And I think you and I face similar issues in that we're not great at this, but we know enough to be kind of dangerous. And we also have sites that used to be kind of a wall of text. And I think that's one of the issues that you have on the Red Sweater site, the Mars Edit page, really. Because like you don't need to redesign your whole site necessarily. Like the Mars Edit page is the big one that needs to be updated potentially. And the thing I realized after I wrote the first version of the micro.blog kind of about like, what is this all about page is that no one reads it. No one reads it. Like I have all this stuff. No one reads it. And so what I decided yesterday is or I decided it before yesterday. I've been kind of, as I'm thinking of things, I've been writing notes down on this notebook that I have next to my computer. Actually, the Pano book from Studio Neat. Shout out. Nice little notebook. I've been doing little sketches and stuff over the last couple of weeks. And yesterday, I finally put it into HTML. And what I did is I just took out everything. And I just said, how can I convey the mission statement and the purpose as concisely as possible? Take everything else out. And I don't know. It's only been 24 hours. We'll see how I feel about it next week. But like so far, I really love it because it's like, if you don't read more than two sentences, you still hopefully get the idea. And then there's a screenshot of the Mac app, and then you click and you register, and that's all you get. And there's other pages in the help and the about. There's other pages that have more text and more descriptions of all the features. But I've been trying to fight this urge that I think all programmers have, which is like, I know how it's implemented. I'm just going to tell you all the features. And that's not the best way to market something. The best way is to have a little story that people can understand. And that's it's a huge challenge for MicroDevBlog because it's new and different. And so, yeah, I should outsource this to someone else, a designer and a marketing person and someone who can write text. But I'm moving forward, and I think I've hit on something that's going to work. And we'll see.
So this is the main page at MicroDevBlog.
Yeah.
And it now starts with today's social networks are broken.
Yeah, it's only if you're signed out. If you're not signed in, you get this.
Yep.
You can't.
I had to sign out to get this. Yeah. That's kind of an interesting challenge too. I've noticed that that's something to consider. Like, just because somebody is already your customer doesn't mean that they might not want to see your main page, right? Especially like if you're trying to share it with somebody.
Yeah, that's the issue, because with this, if you're signed in, I wanted micro.blog, you know, slash nothing, just like the root. I wanted that to be the web app. And so like the timeline. So I think I should expose this text elsewhere, but it's a little weird with micro.blog because it's both like marketing, here's what it means, and it's also the site that you actually use.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I think you're onto something. I like the idea of taking everything out and starting from scratch. And it's like I'm looking at my red sweater at the Mars Edit page, and it's like some of these, you're right, it's like nobody reads. So take out all the text, first of all.
Well, and also your screenshots, like if I'm just going to critique, you know, and like this is not bad. Like the fact that this is held up for 10 years is incredible, right? But like the little screenshots, I think having one big screenshot would help it feel maybe more modern and more, you know, you don't have to click to see what Mars Edit looks like.
Yeah, there's a lot to do. I also just noticed like there's some features here where it's probably like, I don't even want to stress these features anymore.
Oh, interesting.
You know? So I'm going to have some work to do. Well, like, I made some interesting choices for Mars Edit 4. They're sort of like sneaky in a way. Like, so one example is I took out Flickr support. Because Flickr is effectively, I mean, I don't want to offend anybody who's still holding on to it. I was such a fan of Flickr. It's effectively dying, you know? Like, my opinion is Flickr will be gone at some point. So I had to make this call where I was like, I don't want like a tentpole feature of my app to be tied to a service that's probably going to go away. And so like the way it is now and the way it's been for years is you go to like Mars Edit's media window and it has three major tabs. It has a tab for everything that's on your Mac, has a tab for everything you've already uploaded to your blog, and then it has a tab for Flickr. It's kind of funny. It's like Flickr like has this like increasingly undeserved place at the top of the structure.
Yeah.
And so I realized pretty late in Mars Edit 4's development that I wasn't comfortable with that. But I also wasn't comfortable with just like summarily shutting down people's workflows who've gotten used to using Flickr forever in Mars Edit. So I settled on a compromise, which I think will work pretty well. The Flickr tab is still topmost and present in Mars Edit 4 only if you're already logged into Flickr. So it's there if you are logged into Flickr. And so in other words, if you like upgraded from Mars Edit 3, you should still have your token. And if you're not logged into Flickr, it's as if Flickr is not a feature for the app. So I thought that was actually a pretty good approach because it makes it so like everything's business as usual for people who already use Flickr. And it doesn't entice anybody in to thinking it's going to be there forever.
Right.
And it also doesn't send this sort of mixed message of like, this weird developer thinks Flickr is still a big deal. You know?
Right. It's like when Mars had a 3 shipped, Flickr was a big deal, or Mars had a 2, or whenever the Flickr was added, like, yeah, it was like, that's a huge feature. Like Flickr was so used so frequently that like, that's a huge convenience for people. And so, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And it's a nice kind of bonus that you're still, you're not ripping all the code out. You're still letting people use it. But it's the kind of thing that, like, over time, I could see, you know, maybe just completely remove it and Mars Edit 5. Right. So there's things on your marketing page, actually, that you want to downplay or remove. And there's probably new stuff that you want to highlight,
absolutely,
right? New features and things you want to include. So I do think no one reads anymore, but I do like the general, like, here are some big features and here's some text. And I used to have, I still have that buried on the Micro.blog blog, like about page. But I something clicked for me when I decided I didn't need any of that on the, like the introduction on the homepage. And of course, Mars Edit and Micro.blog blog are different apps and the same kind of rules and, you know, decisions don't apply to both. But for me, it was really freeing to like not include a feature list. And I'm still getting used to that, but I think that's where I think I need to go more on that extreme of things, because so for so many years, like here's a feature list, here's a feature list, here's a feature list. I think I need to train myself to forget about the features and focus on the story and like
more
why
telling
it matters.
A story,
why does it matter? And then the features need to expose themselves and they need to be there for when some, because I still have people that are using micro.blog either for a while since the Kickstarter or just recently getting an invite as I'm rolling it out to more people. I still have a bunch of people that are confused by certain things or they say, you know, this isn't for me because it doesn't have this feature when it does have this feature, right? So there's still work to do on showing people what the features are, but it's too much to show them that at the beginning. Because if they're not sold on why it exists, the features don't even matter.
That's right. Yeah, I like the idea of focusing on the stories. And I realized looking at my site that this might have been more like prevalent, like just attitude of the day, but it just looks like I had this fear of the user ever having to scroll, right? So it's like you have to get everything into this single page. It's like a 8.5 by 11 photocopy sheet of pitch for Mars Edit 3.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, I got to have an icon in here somewhere. I got to have like the whole left side has to be like space for all the testimonials. And then I need a pitch, download link, and then I need to have screenshots, but they take up too much space. So I'll just put these little capsules. And then I need to list every single feature that the app has. And it all has to fit in like 9-point type.
Right.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy by 2017 standards, but there is good stuff in here. Like I think it's might be a fun experience for you, kind of going through and figuring out what shouldn't change and what like some of the pitch you have for Mars Edit, you know, the best way to write, preview, and publish your blog. You know, think outside the browser, like why browsers suck for doing blog editing. Like some of the stuff, like it feels like a good you know pitch for like why they need Mars Edit. And so I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting to see what you come up with. Like, well, I'm very, very curious what the new page will look like, what you'll keep, what you'll throw out.
I'm just going to leave it the way it is.
Just find and replace 3
just
to
ship
4.
The dang thing.
That's also an option. I mean,
No, it's one of those things though. And like I said, opening up this segment, it's like, oh man, like, that's another thing I actually sort of absolutely have to change before I ship. And there's some things that I have on my list for wanting to change before I ship that there aren't as critical. Like one of my other big, like, oh, that would be nice to finally do that is to have like a proper quote unquote knowledge base type, you know, reference of help on my site. And that's just one of those things. I make it more complicated than it is, but I've had this list of like, oh, my to-do list for years has been like, oh, try out all these different knowledge-based software packages. Of course, I could have just like started writing, you know, FAQs and their own plain HTML pages and linking to them. But well, sometimes I think about things a little bit too much. So we'll see what I get done for Mars Edit 4. But I also have to remind myself, and I remind all of you listening, a product release date is not actually the end of the world. Like, you actually can keep working on things. This is good. This is good advice for you too, Manton. Opening up micro.blog to the world, you are allowed to continue to improve it the day afterwards. And you're allowed to evaluate the feedback of the hopefully thousands of people who come to try it and learn some lessons from it, and then make another pitch for users to sign up for it 6 months later, where you've learned from all the mistakes of this release. And the nature of the world being as it is, where we have like millions and millions of iOS and Mac users, we are never in our wildest dreams going to reach even a significant percentage of them with any particular product release we do. And the privilege or the advantage of that to us, it's sort of sad on the one hand, but the good news is we make another pitch 6 months from now and we're going to hit a completely different random subset of those people. It's kind of cool. It's kind of like trying to pitch a special suntan lotion at the beach in Hawaii. You're not going to see the same 1,000 people at the beach in Hawaii today that you're going to see there 3 weeks from now, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's always new people coming in. And I think there's something to be said for that, at least at our scale with major releases, promoting things. Like, we try to get the word out as well as we can. We contact the press. We tweet about it. We blog about it. But then we rely upon like this word of mouth. Hey, even if we pay for ads, we still are going to hit like a random subset of people. It's not going to go, Manton, you flip the switch on this and you say micro.blog is now available to everybody. And then if you're lucky, 10,000 people see the news, right? And I just strongly believe that then if you did that again, mm-hmm. the next day even, a different 10,000 people would see the news.
I hope so, yeah.
I mean, you know, there's going to be some overlap, but like, you know how it works these days. Like, most of us, except for like John Siracusa, are not like completionists about anything that we read, mm-hmm. right? Like, I read RSS feeds. I still gloss over stuff, even though I've taken the effort to subscribe to it. So something that's on like iMore today, there's a chance I'm going to see it, and there's a chance I'm not going to see it. Mm-hmm. Everybody I follow on Twitter, there's a chance I'm going to see their tweets and a chance I'm not going to see them. Yep. And I think that's truer now for everybody than it's ever been before. And when we get the message out about something we've worked on, it's a frustration that we can't reach everybody, but we never were able to reach everybody. We've always been reaching a subset. And now one of the sort of like advantages is even using the exact same avenue of delivering the news, we're going to reach a different subset every time we try.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think that's more true than ever. And I have to remind myself sometimes, like, it's okay to post something twice. No one saw it the first time. Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah. Some people did, but like relatively nobody. And so, yeah, that's marketing. That's why you see the same Coca-Cola ad on TV all the time, yeah. over and over and over again. It's okay.
Right. Somebody's finally like, oh, Coke exists. Right. Know that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, good advice. We had a lot to do. We have launches to do. We haven't talked about dates, but maybe we'll talk about that next week. Best of luck wrapping everything up. And mm-hmm. everyone, thanks for listening to the show. Don't forget also about the memberships. If you go to corint.org, click on membership, you can sign up and you get access to our Extra Intuition podcast. This is just for members. We've done a couple episodes of this already. It's really fun. So hope you check it out.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And Manton, I'll catch up with you again next week.
See ya.